Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 23, delivered on November 14, 2017. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 2.
Today, Review for Exam 2. Exam 2 is structured identically to Exam 1. You will be given 5 problems, and you ask... This is an old exam, by the way, but I thought you'd like to see it, fortunately. By the way, this is a question base. I'm going to put some of this up on my podcasting site here for you, but this is not all of the comprehensive questions yet. Now, start off with a couple of basics. The questions are about the same somewhat from semester to semester, but there are new questions that come in and old questions get thrown out. First things first, know the relationship between risk and return. What is the relationship between risk and return? Now remember what I told you, that there is that is somewhat deceptive to the extent that the relationship isn't exactly risk and return. There's a word in front of each of those that you have to include in your definition. Also, just as far as definitional kinds of questions go, distinguish between systematic and unsystematic risk. These are straightforward, one-sentence answers I'm giving you right now. I'll get to the deeper questions in a little bit here. But distinguish between systematic and unsystematic risk. And know which one the investor should expect a reward for bearing. Again, on a one-sentence kind of basis, answers. What's the relationship between internal rate of return and net present value? What is the relationship between internal rate of return and net present value? Now, I'll return to that. That question could actually be a little deeper. So that's the definitional type of question. Then there's one that could be a little bit more in depth. Now, let me see my question. Identify two known points on the security market line. Identify two known points on the security market line. Now, again, remember, you don't draw graphs on an essay exam, and you don't use equations on an essay exam. You give me answers, and no lists. Don't try to hide a list in two separate sentences, one and then two lines down the other sentence. Just give me a straightforward answer if it's something like that. Okay. What does the beta of a security or portfolio measure? What does the beta of a security or portfolio measure? Why is debt cheaper than equity as a source of capital? Why is debt cheaper than equity as a source of capital? Now, there are a couple of reasons, and you get credit for one of those, if you can give me one of the reasons. But again, there are several reasons debt is cheaper than equity as a source of capital, but you need give me only one of the reasons. Why is the correlation between stock prices, or I'm sorry, between stock returns or prices, it doesn't matter, important in forming a portfolio, in constructing a portfolio? Why is the correlation between stock prices or stock returns important in constructing a portfolio? What is meant by the quote unquote market premium? Now, again, don't give me an equation. Explain it. Just like I did in class. You want to own a well-diversified portfolio. Explain two ways that you could do this. You want to own a well-diversified portfolio. Explain two ways that you could do this. Now, I actually gave you three ways. If you remember on the board, I just listed three different ways. You give me two of those ways. Now, I could come back with a question similar, but a little deeper. What are the advantages? What is an advantage? And what is a disadvantage to using mutual funds for your portfolio? Now, an alternate question could be, give an advantage and a disadvantage to using electronically traded funds. To construct your portfolio. The Federal Reserve is going to increase or decrease short-term interest rates. And I'll do it one way or the other. And I will ask this question, by the way. If the Federal Reserve signals that it's going to increase or decrease, it could go either way, the question could. But the expected return to the market portfolio remains unchanged. What happens to the expected returns on stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? Okay, now, let me do this. I'm going to do four different ways that I could do this, okay? That way, I'm not using increase, decrease, beta above 1. Let me give it to you four different ways. If the Federal Reserve signals that it will increase short-term interest rates, but the expected return to the market portfolio remains unchanged. What happens to the expected return on stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? What happens to the expected return on stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? So the first way I could do it is that the Fed increases short-term interest rates. What's the effect on stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? Now I could do the same question, but the Fed is decreasing interest rates. Short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return on stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? So in other words, it's the same as the first one, except this time the Fed is going to decrease interest rates, short-term interest rates. Now, the third way I could do it, if the Federal Reserve signals that it will increase short-term interest rates, but the expected return to the market portfolio remains unchanged. What happens to the expected return on stocks and portfolios below, with betas below 1? So this time, increasing short-term interest rates, what happens to stocks and bond stocks and portfolios with betas below 1? And then the last one is that the Fed decreases short-term interest rates. But the expected return to the market portfolio remains unchanged. What happens to expected returns on stocks and portfolios with betas below 1? So let me summarize it. The expected return to the market portfolio is going to remain unchanged in all four scenarios. In the first one, the Fed increases short-term interest rate. What happens to stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? In the second one, the Fed decreases short-term interest rates. What happens to the expected return on stocks and portfolios with betas above 1? Now, in the third one, the Fed increases short-term interest rates. What happens to stocks and portfolios with betas below 1? And the fourth one, the Fed decreases short-term interest rates. What happens to expected return on stocks and portfolios with betas below 1? So there are four different scenarios. One of those will be on the exam. Guarantee you. Might even make it the first one like I have in the past. Okay, going on now. Comparing a young investor in his or her mid-20s with an older investor in his or her mid-50s. Again, comparing a young investor in his or her mid-20s with an older investor in his or her mid-50s. What would you expect to find about the relative betas of their portfolios? What would you expect to find about the relative betas of their portfolios? Explain your reasoning. You were taught two modern investment decision-making rules corporations can use. You were taught two modern investment decision rules corporations can use. What are they, and what is their relationship to each other? You were taught about two modern investment decision rules corporations use. What are they, and what is the relationship between them? That's actually a twist on a question that was more definitional I gave you earlier today. Okay, I'll go through the whole thing. You were taught two modern investment decision rules that corporations can use. What are they, and what is their relationship? This is not actually a hard question. It's like two short sentences. One, you tell me what the investment decision rules are. Do not abbreviate. Okay, remember that. You are writing for an educated client, information clientele, but they don't know your abbreviations. And then what are they and what is their relationship? That's just a straightforward sentence. And remember, don't use words. Don't say equal, put an equal sign or a number. Write things out the way you were supposed to have been taught in English grammar and composition courses. What is the relationship between volatility and diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk? What is the relationship between volatility and diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk? This is actually, it can sound like a hard question, but it is a very, it's almost like the answer is so easy you might not see how easy the answer is. It's a one sentence answer. I'm almost tempted to give you the first couple of words of the answer, but you wouldn't respect me if I did that. Yes, we would. Yes. Indeed, yeah. Yeah. You've said that before, yeah, animal. The sum of, that would be the first three words of that answer. Now, by the way, you want to keep these because these same questions are meet for the final exam. By the time we get to the final, there's some material after exam two, but a lot of the final is just review, showing me that you know what I've taught you. Okay, on a financial news show, a stock analyst shows the price chart of a stock. And notes the considerable price volatility. On a financial news show, a financial analyst shows the price chart of a stock and notes the considerable price volatility. He says, this is clearly a very risky stock. He says, this is clearly a very risky stock. Why might he be completely wrong? Why might he be completely wrong? This is actually related to the last question I gave you. More of a practical approach to it. One last one. If interest rates in the economy are rising, how will this affect the number and general risk of projects corporations undertake? How will this affect the number and general risk of projects corporations undertake? There's one last one here I forgot. I didn't catch. Demonstrate how an investor would choose three mutual funds to form his portfolio and explain why he would choose these particular kinds of mutual funds and explain why he would use these particular kinds of mutual funds. Now, I'll give you a hint on this one. This has to do with betas. And I showed you a chart up here. Three different scenario chart. So what you have to do is explain how he would choose his mutual funds. What would be his basis for the choice of each? In your first sentence. And then in your second sentence, explain why he or she would do this. Now it's your turn to ask me questions. I'm not going to give you answers this time, but I will certainly shoot down anything you ask that is not going to be on the exam distinctly. Do you have any questions? Yes.
For the one where you do four options, you're just going to pick one.
One of those. Now, I've done this in the past. I kind of cycle them through. And remember that this has to do, and I will tell you this much. This has to do in that class. It was either the last class or the class before that, where I drew out that the capital market line, and I showed what would happen as it pivoted on. Remember, I'm not asking you to change the expected market premium. So one of the 2 points of the capital market line is going to stay the same. And so the security market line is going to pivot around that. Tell me what's going to happen in one of those scenarios. Here we go. Drawing it out, and do not draw a graph on the exam. That's not how we do it. But I will draw you that so that it, one here, so you can remember. You have your risk-free rate with a beta of 0, and then you have your beta of 1.0 which is going to give you the expected return to the market. You have your capital market line like that. Now remember the different scenarios that I showed you. As the, it will stay here. The market, expected return to the market portfolio, the one that has a beta of 1, is going to stay fixed. And then the Fed is going to move interest rates up or down. So what you have to do is figure out what's going to happen to the expected returns on stocks either with a beta above 1 or a beta below 1. What happens to their expected return? That's that axis right there, okay? Ow. So, but I will ask only one of the four scenarios. Clearly, if you get this down, you're going to have a good comprehensive understanding of what the capital asset pricing model tells us about what to do in different kinds of scenarios. What else? You got anything else for me here? Yeah.
Can you repeat question 4?
What? Can you start it off for me? I was kind of being random there. I just did. Ah! You fool. Seriously? You aimed at that question. I should have just, well, gee, that was one I haven't shown you before. Remember, the 2 points will define a unique line, straight line. And so the cap M is just a linear equation with a y-intercept of R sub F. And the other point we know is the 0.1 comma expected return to the market premium, to the market portfolio. Yeah, anything else? What do you have? What do you want to know? This one is a deeper exam, just a caution to you. There are questions that probe deeper, and also the grading is tougher on this one than it was on the first one. I was trying to lull you into a sense of complacency. Make sure that you don't give me lists. Don't answer 5 questions and tell me. I can't believe people still do this. Just grade my best 4. Spell. Yeah, by the way, that one important point, if I spell a word in the question, don't misspell it in the answer, for God's sake. Don't give me equations, of course, as I've said before, no equations on these exams. And you don't need to underline things to make sure I notice them. Yeah.
Do we have to know the difference between preferred and common stock?
No. There is typically sometimes a question on exam 2. Her question was, do we have to know the difference between common stock and preferred stock? This time, no. Sometimes I will ask that. So if you're copying those online copies of my old exams, those are a bad place to start for one thing, because I've really changed questions a lot these days because of the online cheating sources. But anyway, no, not this time. Just drop that one. And there was another question sometimes you'll see. What are 2 ways that a corporation can fund projects with equity? And that is not about common and preferred stock. It's actually something else, two different ways I distinguish equity. Remember, you can talk about equity technically, preferred and common, but there's a deeper way that companies distinguish between 2 types of equity. And if you saw that one in an old exam, watch out. That one usually people still, even if I warn them, this is not about preferred versus common stock, they still try to do it. Yeah.
Things like, what is the beta measure? Since that was on the last test.
Uh-huh.
Is it possible to still be on the test?
Could be, Wabbit. Okay. Because you see beta, you notice that that's actually a very important thing. What amazes me is how many investment gurus try their best to use other measures of risk. It blows me away that even portfolio managers
here in our classes on investment use a risk measure that is not beta. And that's just amazing to me. And notice that I covered it up because I don't want anyone to say you're disrespecting our measure. There's one called the Sharp ratio, and then there's one called the Sortino ratio for analyzing mutual funds. And those two use the standard deviation, not beta. And it just kind of knocks me down. Why are you using something that has all kinds of diversifiable risk in it to measure something that we should not be expecting a return for? By the way, I'm actually giving you some answers on questions on the exam by saying what I'm saying right here. But anyway, the one we try to get people to come out of here using is beta, not sigma, not other measures of volatility, just beta, but God knows. And then there's one that you'll see in a more advanced course, too. Anything else you want to ask? Yes?
Anything about, like, the whole underwriting process?
No, no. That I actually, you'll see on old exams, that one sometimes, you know, about, well, you find your investment bankers, you got your firm commitment offering, your best efforts, and then your self-underwriting. I didn't ask that on this exam at all. But it still could be on the final exam. And we'll have a thorough review, the last week of class review for the final and all of that. Yeah. Well, you sure have to, but it's not enough. It's like, you're a guy. That's not enough. I have to say you're a sensitive, kind, caring, academically enhanced, buff, even, guy. If I could just call you a guy, you could be, you know, anyone, you know. So I have to give more to it. Each of those words has an adjective in front of it that you need to use. If you don't use them, miss one of them, you lose half. You lose 7 points, miss both of them, and you lose 14 points on a 20-point question. So make sure you know those two words because they're important. Anything else? It's about... This one should take you about 30 to 35, 40 minutes to finish. If you're taking less time than that, well, you're a genius, or you really aren't doing well. And if you take about more than about 45, 50 minutes, then you're really struggling with this material. Remember, you get one note card. Now, keep your note cards for God's sake, because you can have those on the final exam. You're allowed to have three on the final. Your two from the exams, and then one for the material after exam two. So keep your note cards and make them nice. Perhaps even laminate them. Yeah. I have five questions, choose four. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.